Hello, everybody, and indeed, today is the 23rd of January, 2016, and you're listening to Sami Shah right here on Sami Says, right behind the mic. Well, how am I mess that up? How did I mess up my own introduction? Oh my god, it's such a simple rhythm and beat and everything. I gotta figure it out. I've done like 30-something of these, 40-something, who knows how many episodes I've done at this point. And it's a very simple introduction. Hello, everybody, and indeed, welcome to Sami Says. This is me, Sami Shah, right here behind the microphone and behind the steering wheel when I'm driving or not when I'm not driving. And somehow I couldn't even get that right. But I did get the date right. Today is the 23rd of January. And that means I have, 3 days left before my flight to Melbourne, to Perth, right here from Melbourne. And I'm going to Perth for the Perth Fringe Festival. And my first show, which is called Punching Down, starts on the 27th. That's it, 27th, Punching Down, and it's going to be an hour, 45 minutes of brand new spanking stand-up comedy from me that I've been working out in clubs and galleys and railways and alleyways and comedy dens and basements and cupboards and attics and the trunk of your car, and I'm behind you right now. And I've been working it out over these, you know, over the last year, and I think it's a good solid hour. It's probably I'm happier with this than I have been with any comedy I've written to date, and I think that's only because, you know, that makes sense. If you're not getting better, then you're going backwards. And I have no idea why I'm getting into a motivational speech to myself about myself. But yeah, that's on the 27th. It starts, it's at Comedy Shack, which is a venue that seats 230 people. I can tell you right now, I'm not going to sell 230 tickets for every night, for 7 nights, or 5 nights, however long I'm doing this first round of shows. So tickets are available. Please, please do buy them. Please tell your friends to buy them, tell your lovers to buy them, tell your enemies to buy them. Tell family to buy them. Tell everyone to buy them. If we actually manage to sell our 230 tickets for even one of the nights, I will personally lip kiss every single person in the audience. As opposed to the other types of kisses where you just rub elbows together or noses. Well, that is true. You can. I mean, there's Eskimo kisses, is rubbing a nose together. Yeah. All right, so I completely went down a tangent in my own head, tried working out a bit right now, and then that died, and so I just gave you like three seconds of dead air. Yeah, so 27th of January is my first Fringe run of shows called Punching Down, stand-up comedy. I've got awesome Perth-based opening acts coming up. There's the first night, there's Sean Joyce, who is amazing, and she's one of my favorite people on the planet. There's Brody Snook, who is a British Australian comedian, who's probably one of the sharpest comedy writers I've seen in a long time. There's Beck Charlwood, who has been a staple of the Perth comedy scene for the last 2-3 years. There is Craig Quatermain, who is absolutely fantastic. He's going to be one of those guys that in 2-3 years' time, you're going to see him on TV, and he'll be, you know, one of those people where it's like his comedy is important and it's changing things and opinions and stuff, and I get to have him as an opening act right now, which is great, and that's going to be lots of fun. So that's coming up in a week's time, and then from the 3rd of February 2016, my other show starts, which is called Islamo-Farcist, which is me talking about my relationship with Islam, and explaining Islam, and explaining Islamic history, and explaining racism, and Islamophobia, and all these things to an audience, and it's going to be amazing, and hilarious, and funny, and all these other things that I plan on making it when I do write it. Yeah, we're still there. I have it in my head. I sit down. Here's the problem. I have gotten so many writing projects going on simultaneously, all of which have deadlines around about the same time, that I don't know how to prioritize them anymore. This move really messed up my schedule and stuff. And so as a result, what's happening is I sit down to write and I open up the list of things that are due, they're all due simultaneously, and then I decide, fuck it, I'm going to watch Mozart in the Jungle instead, which is really fantastic, by the way. Gael Garcia Bernal, who's such a great... If I was a woman, I would have my vagina all up in that. And even as a straight heterosexual man, I want to get up. He's really fucking hot and cool and funny. Yeah, he's really cool in that show. I watched Deutschland 83 or 84, one of those two numbers. really good show as well, about, especially if you're into like the Stasi and East Germany, West Germany spy intrigue stuff. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of these things, which aren't writing, which aren't me sitting down and writing a script for the Perth Fringe Festival show Islamofarcist, which is coming up, like I said, on the 3rd of February, and it has an extended run of, I think, 9 days or something, so that's going to be damn good when I get down to writing it. I do promise to make it very good, I promise. I'm not an idiot. I've done this before. I wait until the last second, I have a dream for some reason, and in that dream, the entire structure of the show, it presents itself to me, and then I wake up in the morning and I write it, and that's how the shows always go. I don't know why. I don't know why, as an atheist, I'm relying on divine inspiration so blatantly, but it works. For some reason, Thalia, the muse of comedians and poets, decides, oh, this sad sap, and she comes at the last second and takes a big, nice, you know, shit all over my brain and gives me fantastic comedy. Jesus, Sammy, buy your own press a little bit much, but yeah, it's not fantastic comedy, but she gives me comedy, and then some of it's okay. But yeah, that's something that's going to happen eventually, I'm sure. And if it doesn't, I have enough of the thing in my head to make it work anyway. But yeah, there's a difference between, it's going to be good if I write it down, it's going to be great if I get that nighttime inspiration that only seems to happen in the last seconds before the show, or the last days before the show. The other thing that's going to be happening, really cool, which I can't give you the dates for right now, but I'll announce them on my Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/samisha.fans, and SAMISHH for Samisha. And that is, I'm going to be silent disco DJing 4 different shows. For those of you who don't know, it's a really cool thing that happens at the Perth Fringe every year, where everyone, there's a dance floor, it's in a public space, so they don't want the music blasting into other people's lives. So everyone puts on headphones, with huge noise-canceling headphones, and they put them on their heads, and the DJ then does his DJing, and the headphones pick up the music wirelessly, and everyone dances to that. And I get to DJ it for 4 different nights. I love doing that. I have to make my playlists and get all of that sorted out as well. It's just going to be all 80s and 90s trash. That's me. It's going to be just the best, like George Michael and Madonna and KLF and all those things, the stuff that I like moving to. So that's what's happening in my life right now. It's not bad. It doesn't sound bad. It sounds exciting. It sounds like things are moving along. I've got a ton of projects going on. I've got the shows coming up, and all of it is just, I don't know. It's a bit frustrating though. It's a bit exhausting because I like working. I've got a ton of projects happening, and then that makes me happy. And if I call them projects one more time, you guys can come and stab me in the fucking throat. But I'm at that phase right now, which I get to at the start of every year, where nothing's finished for another 2-3 months. So I'm going to be working my ass off, and then I don't see the fruits of any of those things for a while. And some of them I might not even see the end result of for another 4-5 months. And you feel like you're just throwing work into a void. And after a while, it kind of gets a bit tiresome. Partly also because I'm just not being able to do as much stand-up comedy. That's how I vent. I get up on stage and I vent. And I'm not being able to do that as much in Melbourne. Partly because just, you know, the whole settling in and Anya's school and all those things. And also because over here, you just get 5-minute spots. Everywhere I go, they just offer 5-minute comedy spots. And 5 minutes for me is how I warm up to do the bit that I'm going to do in my spot. I'm used to 15 to 20, at the very least. And so, yeah, so it's, I'm having trouble recalibrating my comedy to 5 minutes. What else has been happening? I'll tell you this story. This was an interesting little occurrence. So I was on the tram the other day. That's the best thing about living in Melbourne, by the way, is the trams and the buses and no more driving. I drove for 3.5 years for 4 hours a day, maybe 5 hours a day I'd drive. I developed like this wound on the tail of my spine because of how much I was just sitting in the car, and the posture issues that kind of developed from that, and back pain, chronic, and all these things. And I'm glad I don't have to do it anymore. And now I just stand in trams, I stand in trains. I love it. I don't even sit down. I just stand there. And it's great. I absolutely appreciate it. Except when I get on the tram, I'm on my way to a comedy gig. and comedy gig. Good God, could I over-explain it more like an old man from 1973? Get in the automobile car! But yes, on my way to a gig, and I sit down, and because there's no space to stand or anything, and I'm sitting on my seat, and I'm looking at my phone, and, you know, thumbing through just articles or whatever, and this large gelatinous woman, I don't mean to be sizist, although you guys, you know, some of you do know that I am a bit of an asshole when it comes to weight issues, but she was very large. She was very, very large, and not in the large way that I've seen a lot of, like, because most Australian white large ladies are strangely rocky. Their structure is extremely solid. Like they look like they, all the fat is made out of granite, and it doesn't jiggle, and it's all held firmly into place with pure bigotry and hatred. Like, that's how they exist. Like, their hatred for the world is so intense that it's calcified all the fat in their bodies and turned it into, I mean, it just turned it into the side of a volcano, you know. That's basic calcified is the only word I can come back to, so I'm going to stop right there. But they're the ones you always see on every video, and they're cursing, and they're screaming at immigrants, and they're telling immigrants to get off the train, and get off the bus, and to go back where they fucking came from, and all that stuff, right? Those are the old white ladies of that size that you most commonly see in Australia. This wasn't that. This was an old white, not old, like, probably 40, late 40s, early 50s, and just, you know, large, but in an oozing, a lardy, a doughy, a very saggy kind of way, where there was puddles of flesh, you know, dripping down over other puddles of flesh. You know, the kind where, like, when your arm is straight, and then there's a dollop of back fat on the elbow that hangs down so low that it almost touches the wrist, like that kind of a thing. And so she gets on, and she sits down, and as she's sitting there, she starts staring at me. And I know she's staring at me because even though I have my eyes down, by the way, I'm not looking at her, but I'm looking at my phone. I'm reading an article. I was halfway through an article, and I'm reading the thing. And I can feel the heat of her eyes on my forehead. You know, when someone's staring at you and you know they are, and they're right across from you, and you don't even have to look up to know that's confirmation, because you can feel the laser burns, you know, just above your eyebrows, and as the retinas kind of, you know, just dive through into your brain. And so I feel this, and I look up. And I notice this woman, and she's just staring. But there's no hate in it. Because for a second, I was like, oh no, is this going to be one situation where someone, you know, I end up on a YouTube video where this woman is just going, you know, fucking go back where you fucking came from. And it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all, because she wasn't glaring. She was just staring. And there's a difference there. And I was like, okay, that's strange. She's just not blinking. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a thing where she's just looking off in the middle distance. She doesn't even notice I'm there. Sometimes it happens. I get conscious of that sometimes. I'll just be looking off into the distance and my mind wanders. And that happens to me a lot. Where, like, and that's, you know, I'll be thinking of something else. I'm just looking at nothing. And I realize that someone thinks that I'm staring at them. And they're glaring back at me because they think I'm being rude. And then I have to just look the other way and apologize or whatever. So I thought maybe this is that situation. So I looked down again at my phone, and she keeps staring. So I look back up again, and then I notice movement in the lower periphery of my vision. I knew that, like, when you notice movement and you look towards the movement before you can stop yourself looking, because sometimes you see the movement and you look at it. And before your eyes even get there, that picosecond before your eyes shift over, you know it's going to be something bad. You know this is not something worth looking at. You know this is not something you want to see or should ever see or have to see. But now it's too late because your eyes move faster than your brain can control them. And you're doomed now. because, you know, humankind evolved over hundreds and thousands of years and millions of years to track movement with our eyes, particularly in the periphery. I'm just going to say peripherals and periphery until one of those words makes its way to the top of our vision. And you know, it's because we were worried about saber-toothed tigers hiding in the bushes and sneaking up on us. But, you know, we don't need that skill anymore. We don't. No one's sneaking up on me in Melbourne. And that skill instead just damns me further because I see the movement and I look down just in time to see she's pulled her skirt all the way up her thighs and she's spreading her legs to show me her nether regions, her glory, her JJ, as my child calls it, and no panties, and I can, and despite the size and girth and meatiness of the thighs, I can see darkness. I can see the things that I was not intending on ever seeing there. And she's not breaking eye contact. She's just staring at me and she's doing this. She's basically flashing her vagina at me. And I just, my eyes widen. My breath hitches. Any chance I ever have of having an erection ever again ends right then and there. And I go back to looking at my phone. But now I'm looking the fuck out of my phone. My phone has never been looked at this hard before. And then I realize that there's another woman who's also glaring at me, who's not staring, who's glaring, and she's in my periphery. And I look up, and at this point, I just really should gouge out my eyes because my fucking eyes keep betraying me. And I look up, but there's a woman, there's a young lady on the tram, who's seen this happen, who saw this woman sit down and start putting up her skirt and just staring at me, and saw me look up, be horrified, and look down. And this woman is looking at me with judging eyes. Like, she's angry at me, as if I'm making this happen, as if I'm a guy who has the world's worst mutant power, where I can make women on public transport, but only, like, over large ones, show me their vaginas. Like, that's my X-Men power. It's not that handy, but Magneto still fears me. And so this woman's just glaring at me. For this, so I've got one woman staring at me and showing me things. I've got another woman glaring at me for, I guess, not appreciating what's being shown. I don't know. I don't know whether it was the worst tag team improv anywhere sketch ever. But what happens is that I panic and I just jump off the tram two stops ahead of mine and just run all the way to the gig. Just traumatized, shaking, crying, you know, weeping. The weirdest part, the thing that kind of really made this too surreal, even for me to comprehend what had just happened, is that this is the second time this has happened. This isn't the first time it's happened to me. I don't know why, but this is not the first time it's ever happened to me. So when I moved to Australia in 2012, we lived in Perth for the first month, basically, with family friends, who I'm going to go back and stay with right now when I'm there for my shows. And I was living with them in Perth. And we were, one day, Ishma, Anya, and I decide we're going to go out and get some food. And so we go to a Vietnamese restaurant. There's a Vietnamese restaurant where you get really good pho, and pho, I don't know how to pronounce it. You know, the older I get, the less I know how to pronounce words. Why is that? You know what it is? It's because everyone keeps correcting you. And they correct you based on incorrect information because they're correcting my vocabulary based on either British pronunciations, American pronunciations, or Australian pronunciations. Like, even pronunciation versus pronunciation is a debate. And my problem is, I grew up in Pakistan, I studied the Queen's English, then I went to America, and then I studied English literature and English language over there, and then I went back to Pakistan, and then I came to Australia. So now my English is a muddle of Pakistani pronunciations, American pronunciations, British pronunciations, and Australian pronunciations, and I don't know what the fuck to say when I want to go to the bathroom anymore. I don't know whether it's bathroom, or toilet, or loo, or ghusalkhana, or whatever. I don't fucking know anymore. All right, so I don't know where I was. where I was eating pho in a Vietnamese restaurant in 2012 with Ishma and Ania sitting around me, and Ishma nudges me and goes, I think this is for you. And I say, what? And I look up, and there is a large woman sitting across from me, just staring, and has her skirt kind of pulled up just enough and her legs wide just enough to show things. And I remember in 2012 being absolutely horrified by what's happening and not understanding it. And I told Ishma, I was like, maybe it's a mistake. Maybe she doesn't realize. Ishma's like, she hasn't stopped staring at you. And whenever you look away, she kind of closes them. And then when you lift your chin up, she opens them again. Like, Ishma's been studying this, like David Attenborough, for a while now. And I don't know why. And I just get uncomfortable, obviously. And we just quickly pay because now I'm not eating anymore. And we leave. And now this, 3.5 years later in Melbourne. So I moved to Perth, and within my first month that happens. I moved to Melbourne, and within my first 2 months this happens. And now I'm wondering, is this how Australian cities welcome people? Is this just an Australian tradition the Department of Immigration forgot to mention? Or is this the final test? Is this just a thing of if you put up with this and tolerate it, then you get to be a citizen? Or is there like I am, is me? Is it basically there's a message forum where these women get together and they all basically love, get off on flashing. I'm sure there are forums like that for men. And this one's just women. They get off on flashing and they all get together and they discuss who they'd love to flash. And for some reason, I'm the guy that they all agree on because they know I'm a victim. And I'm a great victim because I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to shut up and I'm just going to take it until I can't anymore. And then I leave and they get away with it. And then they all high five each other. And they all, it's a point based system. And two of them right now are in the lead because they spotted me in the wild. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it keeps happening. I would really, 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 really like it to stop and never happen again. And every female comedian or friend of mine that I've spoken to goes, now you know what it's like to be a woman. And I apologize. I know my misery and suffering is nothing compared to yours. Nothing at all. I know that the things you've had to see because men can't control their urges are 10 million times worse than anything I will ever be exposed to, and I apologize profusely for that. But because you've had to suffer so much more, your wounds, your scabs are thicker, and your self-defense mechanisms are probably more effective than an innocent, naive little youngling like myself who you know, like a babe in the woods, I go trotting off, and then the first big bad wolf I see, I just shriek and cry and get eaten alive because I don't know better. But yeah, it is not fun. It is a strange thing. It is definitely an aspect of living in Australia that I didn't anticipate. I think I anticipated all the other things like the spiders and the snakes and the kangaroos and the joblessness and the working as a comedian and all those things. But this one I didn't anticipate at all. But yeah, that happened, man. I don't know why these things happen to me. It's always me. It's always strange things, and I think at some point people are just gonna stop believing me. But at the same point, it does give me a nice 10-minute story to tell at the Punching Down shows. When I see that, I'll sharpen it up, polish it up, and do a nice stand-up bit. And I'm grateful for that, I suppose. I wish my stand-up wasn't so experiential, but then those are the experiences I've had. I actually found. I'm going to post this on my Facebook page. I found the footage of my first ever stand-up show. The first stand-up comedy show I did in 2005 in Pakistan and in Karachi at the PACC Auditorium. And it was the first time I ever got on stage and did stand-up comedy. And it was an hour-long show because that's just how I did it. That's how I learned. I used to do a new hour every year. And the first time I'd ever do them would be when I did the full hour in front of like 300 people at the time. And it's a video of that. And I was watching it. And there's a few things that you couldn't help but notice. One was that, and by the way, this is the most self-indulgent conversation I'm going to have, a monologue I'm going to deliver right now, because no one gives a shit. No one cares about my observations on my own stand-up comedy from, you know, 10 years ago, but this is my podcast. I'm sorry. I sometimes don't understand why you people listen to it, and I really, really worry about your sanity. But here we go. I was listening to it, I was watching the footage, and the first thing is, I don't know why I'm wearing bell-bottomish jeans. In 2005, was that a thing? Were jeans flared at the edges? Because mine definitely were. There was a flare thing going on with those jeans, where they were widening out near the ankle in a strange way. And given how scrawny I was back then, the jeans at the ankle were wider than my shoulders up top. So that made a strange little presentation. The delivery style, much the same as it is now, but just running through punchlines, talking too fast for everything. But that's been my lifelong problem, so I guess that's just how it is. The material, the stand-up comedy, the bits, were whimsical. I was very influenced by Seinfeld at the time, I remember. It was very Seinfeldian, where just observational comedy. But, and family-friendly, no cursing at all, no bad words at all. Because I just come off the back of Blackfish, which is the improv troupe I was a part of, and we had a strict family-friendly rule, so I was still in that kind of mode. But, it was just a lot of fun little silly observational things. Not every stand-up bit had to be layered with meaning, which I'm tired of doing now, and part of me really misses that. And I think I'm going to try doing that now more. I'm going to try writing silly. You know, I think Melbourne is great for that. But a lot of the Melbourne comedians here specialize in silly and whimsy and lighthearted frivolity, if you will. And if you will, then please beat me to death, because who says frivolity in 2016? That's something I definitely want to bring more into my stand-up. I think I'm going to see how things change over the next year as I'm forced to do more and more five-minute sets. And that means just pack in more jokes into those 5 minutes and see what I can do with that material. I think that's pretty much it for this week. You guys have been fantastic. As always, I appreciate you tuning in. There's stuff going on. I want to tell you about it. I've got projects happening. I can't tell you about any of them right now because they're all under confidentiality agreements. But when I can, I will. I assure you, they're going to be fantastic. They're going to be, you know, great. And I'm very proud of some of the things that I'm involved with right now. Less proud of some of the others, but, you know, that's just how it goes. Some of them just pay the bills, and some of them are things that I'm passionate about. And in the meantime, you guys can find me at www.samisha.com. That's SamiSha.com. My dates for my upcoming shows are there, which are both my Fringe World shows for now. I haven't put up dates for any of the shows once I come back from Fringe yet. There's also my facebook.com/samisha.fans, where I post random things, twitter.com/samisha, where I'm just a fool and a buffoon 90% of the time. And instagram.com/samisha.com. I think is the way I've done it, SamiShaDotcom, that way. And as always, you can email me at samisha@gmail.com. This has been Sami Says, and I, as always, have been Sami Shah.